Oh, I can't talk about it anymore.
Why
I'll talk
not?
to you
Why
after.
not? Don't be like that.
Because no. It's because it's getting posted. One, it's bad form to talk about something like this.
Ugh, already giving me a
Two,
headache, buddy.
nothing's set in stone. Three,
Sure. Guys, why is Ah! I'm not gonna go. It's okay. It's fine, man. You can talk about it. They're not first. They're not gonna watch. Second, it's not that important of a jump. It's not like you're detrimenting their entire business because of it, right?
I mean, I feel like I am. In reality, probably not. But
So
when,
you are a big piece of the puzzle, is what you're saying, and you leaving
yes.
is going to cause the collapse of the genetic gene pool of
What?
whatever the hell. What are you? Wait, what is
You should
it
have said
called?
food web.
Food. Wait, why is it food web? Why would it be food web?
Well, because that's just a more commonly used example, like a collapse of a food web. When you remove one species, it causes like a whole chain reaction.
Actually never heard of that. Food web?
Yeah. Not all species are created equal. So, like, if you remove certain species, it'll have a huge impact. Whereas if you remove others, not so much.
So if we kill all mosquitoes, no problem.
No. I'm sure they're a big part of the food web. I'd have to imagine.
Yeah.
What the fuck eats mosquitoes?
Just a heads up, you've
Bats.
got your mic covering your face. There you go. Nope.
Wait, you talking to me?
Nope, to Yos.
That's for you guys. You guys, you could see whatever. You're gonna see the ugliest person of all time. What matters is what's in front of me. It's a beautiful screen, a beautiful Logitech. You guys know. But you guys won't.
Oh, okay. Sorry, what were you saying, Bass?
Are we recording? Is this the
Always, always. You never pause. I came out the womb recording on a Nokia.
No, you didn't.
I know.
Definitely didn't.
He crawled out with a
There are no
DSLR in one
Nokias.
hand and a microphone in the other.
Yeah, dude.
There are no Nokias in Syria,
No Nokias, only rocks. Yo, shout out to one time. I know we have to say this on this podcast that we did not eat rock soup in Syria, but we did have rock cereal. And that was by far the most abundant type
literally
of
dumbest
grain-filled
thing.
cereal I've ever tasted.
Yep.
I mean, it's milk and rocks, guys. It is what it is. Look, you guys joked about that all my life. I just feel
You
like
know,
now it's time
we
to
had
let
that in
them
the
know what
US
happened.
too, right? It was called
Huh?
Captain Crunch. We had that in the US too. It's called Captain Crunch.
Captain Crunch is the hardest cereal I've ever eaten in my life, too. I think you're right. I can't eat that without like it. You know when you put milk in cereal and some people wait, give it time. All right, am I gonna wait till it's like a part of the milk, like just deteriorating inside? Or do I eat it as the milk is going down? Like as soon as the milk touches, I have to swallow it whole.
I feel
I
like that's how
don't
mini wheats are. Mini wheats are the worst because you have to like douse them in the milk and let them sit there for a while because they're
know.
these huge chunks of wheat. Don't know
And
if you've ever
like
had those.
I
Life
did.
pro tip, heat up the milk first.
Too much work.
Agree.
Cereal specifically for no work eating.
It's yeah.
Specifically for
It's aggressive though. If now you're telling me I have to put something in a microwave first, what's the point?
Facts.
I'm
Yep.
at the
Well,
point where I do
that's.
milk and like water. I'm sorry, cereal and water, where I just eat from the bag, and I just drink milk afterwards. I'm serious. That's my snack. I don't even like fuck all that milk and bowl, and you don't have to wash it afterwards. No, I have a cup. I put cereal in a cup, and then I have a bottle of water, like this guy, and I just chug. And I eat half a bag of cereal in one sitting. But you know, it's okay. As long as
Wow.
it's not the most sugary, I'm fine. But
That's
dude,
crazy.
I got Oreos, Cheerios, Oreos edition. And that was the candy of cereals. I was like, okay, I'm going for it, right? Let me try Reese's Puffs or, because they have a peanut butter type Reese's Puffs Cheerio. They have all these different brands now, right? All these different types of cereals. So I went for the Oreos. I wasn't disappointed. It was sugar. It was deadly. I ate it right after I got the munchies, and life goes on.
Shit.
I feel like in my older age, cereal is definitely the least fulfilling thing I can eat. Like back then, we used to eat it as a meal. Now I eat it and I feel, I don't want to say regret, but almost like I didn't do anything for myself. It's just like mouth pleasure for like
Filler.
5 minutes and that's it.
I agree.
I I can't feel remember. Full. Go ahead.
You don't feel full at all? No. I don't know. Just kind of absorbs.
I can't remember the last time I even had, like, genuine cereal, because the last thing I've done is bought granola bags or, like, bunches of granola and just maybe had it with milk. Usually I just put it on some yogurt in the morning.
I don't eat in the morning. Like, to be honest, like, if we're going through our schedule of life, I wake up, I fast for 16 hours, and then I begin eating at 12 p.m. or a little bit after, depending on the day. But yeah, I no longer need to consume calories in the morning. I've trained my body. Part of that.
I try to do the same thing. I usually don't eat until like 11 o'clock. So.
I'm a fat ass. I will get up and I will eat. Yeah. Usually during the work week, though, it's a cup of coffee until about 10 or 11 a.m.
But that's a good thing, right? Like, to release ketones, you need to kind of give your body some rest from consuming and digesting multiple nutrients or non-nutrients, depending on what you eat in the morning. Give it time to access what it already has. And then by the time you do get to eat, the food itself is so much better because it's deserved rather than just another step in a day, right? You had three steps before: breakfast, lunch, dinner. Now I earned, kind of, or I've waited. I've, if you will, you know what they do in fasting for like Muslims or whatever, what is it called? I don't know, but they call mabruk. So you eventually, when you're done fasting, you kind of earned your food after these X amount of days, not just fucking hours. And it's pleasurable. People get a real high off of it. It's spiritual. But it's not spiritual. It's spiritual mentally, because culture tells us it is. But the feeling you get is biological.
Okay. But yeah, so good introduction.
It does make sense, though, doesn't it? Like the body itself needing the resources, and then it has them already stored instead of accessing external energy, right? Capsules. You have your own capsules inside of your body. Let's access that first. Let's train the body to focus in on these energy capsules, instead of just over stacking and then eventually not using and just storing these energy capsules, which then
becomes a business fast and such. We definitely live in a society of excess. Everybody eats more than they should, more than the body needs to. So the longer you fast, the more your body breaks down. But we also live in a environment where we don't get all the nutrients that we need. So unless you're eating a balanced...
I mean, you can. It's not the environment. I would say it's your choice, right? It's up to you. Like,
yeah,
I don't have to get that Oreos, Cheerios, Oreo type brand, whatever. I just, you know, I overindulge in some days so I can remind myself what I don't want to do. So that's a choice on my part. But the only thing we can say is the price is a bit different when you want to eat healthy, depending on your location.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, but even marketing, you'll get marketed more of a triple Angus bacon sandwich burger thing with no vegetables, a lot more than you get marketed a kale salad.
Yeah, who the fuck wants a kale salad?
Kale's disgusting, dude. Fuck kale.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, the nutrients you end up getting either get one-sided, or, I mean, I'm not saying this for everybody, but a lot of people, you speak to them, like, oh no, I don't eat Brussels sprouts, I don't eat asparagus, I don't eat broccoli.
You have to train yourself, man. Your taste buds, like anything else, you become adaptive towards them once you get a pattern going. Like, you need to put, like, I eat spinach for a snack now, or carrots. Why? Because I just put it in front of me instead of a fucking cookie, a chocolate chip cookie. Which before,
and it gets
like,
the job. My bad. And it gets the job done, though. Like, at my job currently, I get two breaks. It's 2 10-minute breaks and a half an hour. And so I would try to, like, take, like, bullshit food, like you said, cookies or something like that, for the 10-minute breaks. And then afterwards, you don't really feel good. Whereas now, like, I'll take carrots, like you said, or an apple or grapes or something like that, and you actually feel full. You just kind of discipline yourself to, I don't know, discipline feels good. It does, psychologically.
Yeah.
It's because you know it's good for you, right? Logic, like you said, logically, rationally, we know. Like, it's not, we know sugar, carbohydrates doesn't do anything well to our body. It doesn't affect us well. So we know carrots does. We know if you eat spinach, it's going to do something better than the other sugary substance, right? We know that. But it's abiding that pattern. It's holding on to what you know is right and giving it some time to flourish inside of you and your mental state.
Yes, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm not arguing with you on this.
Yes, you are, Roddy. Yes.
All I'm saying is that fasting without the proper nutrients can harm you more than benefit you. So if you don't have that discipline where you choose the carrots over the cookies, and all you have in your diet or majority of your diet is fats, proteins, and carbs, and you don't have any of the nutrients and minerals, when you go into that fasting, you're just going to burn through a lot of the sugar, and you're going to feel lightheaded, you're going to feel tired, you're not going to actually have the energy, because what's breaking down isn't enough to keep your body sustained. That's all I was saying.
Yeah, I mean, that's starvation. We don't want to do all that. Don't starve yourself. Don't do that. You still need your food.
It depends on your lifestyle too. Like if you have a job where you have to hike a lot, it's kind of okay to take carbs every once in a while to give yourself like a real boost or a fast boost. But I don't think eating fats or protein, I think that's the way to go. At least that's what Rogan and all those guys talk about. They only eat that stuff.
Ketone diet?
Right.
Yeah.
Kinetic.
Yeah, but isn't the ketosis?
Ketosis.
Yeah, to put yourself in a state of ketosis, you need to be monitoring your blood sugar levels, and you need to hit a certain state, not go too low, not go too high. Mm. Like when Rogan talks about that, it's a very strict diet. It's not just as simple as fasting and eating this type of food. You eat at a specific time based on your physiological demand. Mm. And then what you eat based on your action, your activity, and you need to maintain this blood sugar level or this mineral level in your body.
But then everyone has their own circumstance. Like Bash was saying, it's impossible to even do any of that if you have an 8-hour day inside of a cubicle office where you're just, I don't know, pounding a keyboard, right?
Doable.
You're going to walk around, do laps inside of like an office. It's not easy for a lot of people. But if you're hiking, yeah, it's much easier. I can go forget about something, be physically stimulated, and then before I know it, I'm back to sitting down. That's another detriment, right? Outside of foods and all this other stuff, it's being physically inactive for the majority of your day. So regardless if you even eat good, you're killing yourself because you're pretty much squishing your organs as you go hour by hour without moving around at all, stagnating your muscles, eventually being a stiff old man at an age 35, 40, right?
I mean, I heard Rogan talk about on one of his podcasts, and he was saying, or maybe his guest was saying, about how they're trying the ketosis diet. They've been eating, checked the blood sugar levels, and then right before a fight, they ate two whole pizza pies. And I'm thinking to myself, hey, I'm on a UFC fighter's diet where I sit at my desk, you know, all day, do nothing. Like, do you at least get the point that I'm trying to make?
We
didn't evolve to the point where we are now based on luxury and eating in excess.
No, that's where it starts. What did our ancestors do? They didn't have access to the abundance of shit that's in Walmart in every corner of every store. They don't have that option. They had to go hunt. And maybe sometimes you don't get food for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 2, 3 weeks, whatever, a couple of days. You don't have that. So what do? You fast. But it's unconditionally, right? It's conditionally based on how much food you can attain throughout that week. So we now we've evolved environmentally, but haven't caught up in our physical state to where we are in our environmental state. So that's why a lot of people are obese and overweight, and forget, even outside the weight, mentally unstable, because all this stuff in combination gives them a detriment to how they live their daily lives. It's impossible, or nearly impossible, for them to be in a well state of mind when their carbohydrates are pounding at their nerves, their neurons are blasting off with this fluctuation of different chemicals telling them do this, but wait, do that the next minute. It's impossible to be balanced or be sustainable for a long period of time as a single human being, even outside of all the fats and shit.
Yeah. I mean, what do other species do, or how have they adapted to certain eating? I mean, there's a lot of plastics out in the environment now, lots in the water. There's a giant island in the Pacific where birds eat only plastic. I don't know if you've heard anything about that, Bash.
The birds are actually, I mean, I know plastic's ingested by a lot of the marine animals, but are they're intentionally eating the plastic?
Yeah. There are birds, I think, I forget what species, and there's a big study on it going on now. I should have done more research on this exact topic. Because the birds seem to almost digest the plastic, and maybe I'm a little misinformed on it, but yeah, it's almost like they survive on this floating plastic island by eating.
Very Darwinian.
Yeah.
Right. No, I didn't hear about that. I know there are penguins that have been found on top of the giant trash mounds, and that they found gulls that kind of just stay around those big trash piles because they get addicted to the shit we throw away, basically, like all the sugary stuff that we don't eat. They get addicted to it just like we get addicted to it. I didn't know they were eating plastic, though. That's pretty crazy.
Again, I could have misinterpreted the article when I read it, but maybe they were just eating the stuff in the trash, not the physical plastic itself. But
right, I think that's probably the case.
That's just a ridiculous adaptation. I mean, but then again, animals have had plenty of strange adaptations over the years.
Some species are better suited. A lot of that comes down to being a habitat generalist or a dietary generalist. So if you specialize in one thing and then that one thing, you know, is disturbed by humans and is no longer around, then you're probably going to go extinct. But if you eat a wide variety of stuff, if you can live in a wide variety of places, then you're less likely to go extinct, generally speaking.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is that geared towards more a physiological attribute? Like, is that similar to Darwin's, finch observation, where different finches had different beak structure? Or is that more of an immediate change in an environment, not a over time development?
No, it's definitely an over time kind of thing. It's just because the environment is... because the environment continues to change and forests can become deserts and, you know, so on and so forth, lakes can become deserts, vice versa. Because the environment changes, the genes that are best suited for an environment, that kind of changes. So some are suited at particular times, others not so much. And so with his finches, he found that depending on the types of seeds that were being produced by plants, which was in accordance with weather and the environment over time, certain beaks were better suited for particular types of seeds and stuff like that. And so, yeah, over time, some alleles are favored and others are not.
Okay. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So you're saying when the finches split up from the original grouping, the group that went where the seeds were larger, the allele that allowed the beak to be slightly bigger just kept getting reproduced over and over, whereas the smaller beak allele birds were not able to eat as much, so they couldn't produce as much.
Right. So if there's a patch of an island where the plants there or the trees there produce these like real thick seeds, you know, you'd be better suited to have a real thick beak the way a lot of finches do, so that you can crack them and get in and eat. So the birds in those areas with the larger seeds, if you have a smaller beak, you're not going to be able to eat and you'll probably die off, or you'll have to migrate elsewhere. And so those populations can become isolated, and then over thousands and thousands and thousands of years, you can get a species. So,
oh man, see, that's crazy, because in the genetics lab that we work, you'll see one or two small changes between a parent and a child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm talking like we're looking at multiple different sequences, almost in my lab, almost the whole genome of a child versus the parent, and you'll see almost the best and sometimes the worst of the parent's alleles get passed down, but that small change between the combination of the mother and the father alleles coming into the child, offspring's allele, that small change can allow over time, over, you know, thousands or millions of years, that kind of physical attribute to just manifest in a population.
Yep.
That's crazy.
That's all it takes, and it's all random too. This is not because beforehand, before Darwin or after Darwin, there was Mendel, and then Mendel went to this peas growing, right, to figure out recessive versus dominant genes and which ones get passed on. Well, there's one trait that gets passed on all the time, regardless of any other trait that goes on. So, okay, dominant. This one's the dominant one, right? And then the recessive ones would be there, but he thought they would disappear. But then if you go and make hybrids, and hybrids of hybrids, well, so continue going down a line of mixtures, they'll pop up again. Meaning recessive genes, in the beginning, we thought they would disappear. They don't disappear. They're still there. They're just in the presence of dominant genes. They're not relevant. They don't get populated.
I know there's one misconception that maybe I've always had, and maybe other people haven't thought about it as much as I did, that populations will only have one thing that will change, and that will mean they will survive or they will not survive, which could be the case in an environmental change, like a river turning to a desert. But if you think about it, we all have different attributes and different alleles in the same population, whether it's your earlobe hangs or it's attached to the side of your face, whether you have two knuckles in your pinky or one knuckle, whether you have a small toe or not have it. There's a big shift in the human population now where your tailbone is getting smaller and smaller. And you will see some people born with a larger tailbone, and they'll say this child has a tail, or they'll have an extra appendage, or people that are being born with smaller and smaller appendices. I mean, that's something that exists in population, and unless a large environmental change happened that makes one of these attributes better, we're not gonna see one attribute grow more than the other. Well, I guess it could also be a social effect, where if all of a sudden people think that detached earlobes are better looking than attached earlobes, or vice versa, and more mating happens that way, like, you know, also what they think with the lion's mane or the peacock feathers.
Or when we figure out eugenics completely and get to transform our being to a whole new planet and end up adapting to anything that we wanted to. I want glowing eyes that shoot laser beams. And then in 2220, I'm able to have that.
I'm sorry to break it to you, but I don't think shooting laser beams is a biological manifestation.
Okay, look, you can go ahead and keep microwaving your chicken pot pies. I want to laser beam them. It's up to you. I'll survive. You won't.
I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm just saying I don't think it's biological. Like, at that point,
no,
you're mixing
obviously into... Obviously, be ridiculous. Obviously. But I'm saying that eventually, eugenics, we encapsulate all of the information that we know about genes, right? When we can access every particle within them, what can't we produce within the human biology?
Depending... Hello?
Someone getting a phone call?
Yes, me.
Oh, that explains why you're froze. So with something like that, like, we already have CRISPR, and that lets us work on the actual genome and kind of modify it and edit it.
These guys don't want to talk. By the way, it's Marco from Syria, and we've been having this back and forth for a while.
So, oh, okay.
So, you can keep going, but you're going to get interrupted maybe two more times.
Tell him I say hello.
Gotcha.
So kind of lost what I was saying.
You're talking about CRISPR.
Oh, yes. So we currently have CRISPR where we can edit and modify the genes in an organism. And, I mean, it's still in the early stages. I don't know how much it'll affect humans as of yet. But... outside of CRISPR, we've already had surviving organisms that were just a hodgepodge of DNA. We were able to, I'm saying we as in the scientific community, not us three, produce a rhesus monkey from two male rhesus monkeys, which, I mean, that is a scientific feat, and some people will say we're playing God in the religious community, but, I mean... that opens up to what you were saying about having, you know, people with, quote, laser beams coming out of their eyes over time. But we also need to understand the epigenome, the stuff that affect the genomic sequence in a living organism, and how that can change certain things.
So isn't that a subcategory of eugenics in general? Just having all these, it's an encapsulation of all this information about genes and overall, right? Like pangenics, yes. Before it became genetics, before, when Darwin first talked about this, right, about the animals and what he observed, it was pangenic, so pan genes. So, but the pan got taken out because of his eventual people that studied under him and all that stuff. So when genetics came about, then what you're talking about is in addition to that. So overall is the control of genes. That's all we need to actually encapsulate, right? Not everything else is kind of just an add-on.
Well, if you want to limit certain diseases, you need to understand how your DNA is going to get changed over time. And unlike evolution, this isn't a change over millions of years. This is a change in development, in evolutionary development, from an embryo, from a zygote to an adult in any living organism, or you know. So something like that, I mean, you look at twins. One twin can grow up to have Alzheimer's, while the other cannot. I'm not saying Alzheimer's is caused by epigenetics, but frankly, we don't know. We don't know why in twins with identical genetic sequences, one can have a disorder and the other cannot. You know, I mean, they will carry certain genes, maybe certain allelic differences that will not manifest in the phenotype until later on, but you know,
So,
that's,
what do you
we need
think?
more understanding.
How much more understanding do we need, and what is missing?
You don't know what you don't know. I mean, we thought once we sequence a genome, everything will be cured. We have like I work in sequencing genome, but yeah, we still don't have everything fixed. We still don't
So.
know enough about cancer as we should. We still don't know how to cure AIDS, or we can maintain a lot of stuff. We were able to diagnose a lot of stuff, but I
So
mean, we still don't know what causes.
specifically, is it patterns that we can't identify within genes to distinguish what they are or they're going to be? Is that what we're lacking? Like if I told you what path are we on now and where's the roadblock, can you specify that?
Biggest thing is, I would say, tools. We don't know what tools we would need, or if the technology's even there yet. I mean, CRISPR certainly helps because now we can modify the genome and see what changes affect the genome that we've modified. There's also, I mean, I'm not saying this is a block because it's a good thing that we have ethics in place in the scientific community, but we also don't run tests the way the Nazis or the TV film super mad scientists, the evil scientists do. You know, we can't replicate Frankenstein monster because of ethics and certain regulations in the scientific community. I mean, you go to a place where regulations can't be enforced, that's a different story, but at that point, how sound is that science? You know,
What are you
like,
testing on? What is the overall result, and what are we trying to attain, pretty much, right?
yeah.
What's the reason for us testing? It's not an easy question, man, but in terms of what you're saying is that these platforms need to be instilled somewhere so that we can use them or access them outside
Yeah.
of. So say we take some poop and we make burgers out of it, right? Where did we begin to think poop can be burgers, right? Well, somebody played around with poop. Somebody's like, okay, can I?
Yeah.
So that's what we have to do and kind of recreate what life is outside of the consciousness that we're also sensitive about. How can we recreate test dummies without the dummies being humane? Is that
Yeah.
possible? Can we do that on a cellular level outside of, don't do it on a ethical conscious level? I don't know. Are cells conscious? I mean, that's another. Are we so going so far to say, okay, well, these microbiological influences in a body can't be harmed or touched because they hold their own ethical stability, right? Do we hold
Yeah.
that to a higher standard? I don't know.
I mean, Bash, are you aware of what reasons we have that we don't simply try to clone endangered species to provide more copies?
It's really hard to recreate genetic diversity, more or less. You got somebody coming down.
Ah! Sound like a monster was coming down.
It Weil?
No, it's my dad.
Oh, okay.
I'm definitely keeping that in, by
It's hard to recreate the genetic diversity that you'd see in wild populations, and just from a economic standpoint, it'd be a pain in the ass to try to create that genetic diversity, which is why someone like me thinks that you should work on sustaining wild populations and kind of let them flourish, and then eventually, just like the American alligator, the bald eagle, they'll get to a point where there's enough genetic diversity, there's enough of them out there that we don't have to invest millions of dollars to do it. My thing is, though, is like, ethically, is trying to cure everything and kind of chase this immortality thing, is that a good thing? Because in everywhere else in nature, death is a good thing. Death is one of the most vital parts of an ecosystem. You know, an organism dies, it breaks down, its nutrients, all its organic matter is recycled, put back into the environment, and it, you know, the generations that follow get to dine upon that. Whereas with us, if we're curing everything, does that lead to exponential growth necessarily, or would there be other things in place to prevent the population from just continuing to pass its inflection point and just, you know, skyrocket? I feel like it's not a good thing.
Yeah, I agree.
That's definitely one of the debates when it comes to CRISPR and it comes to genetic modification. I mean, yeah, it's like you said, the population overgrowth, and humans in general, when it comes to the economy or the ecology, we're very egocentric as a organism. We want to worry more about our survival, and not even our survival as much as our comfort prior to the environment's comfort. And yeah, I mean,
that's sort of natural too, though. Interestingly, like, that's if you look at honeybees, they don't pollinate all these different plants because they're looking out for us and everybody else. They're basically doing their thing, and kind of happen to make the ecosystems go as they do. But it's almost natural to be selfish, but we've evolved into this enlightened state where we don't have to be. And we have curiosity, so we want to know about all these organisms and species and stuff like that. And so it's I don't know, it's hard to make a case instrumentally why we should preserve biodiversity and stuff like that. I feel like I just switched to a topic I wanted to talk about, but what were we talking about? We were talking about exponential growth of human populations, right?
Yeah, so let me chime in here, right? So we have, as a human being, selfish itself can be identified as a scale, right? You could be selfish 100% and not care about anything around you, or you could be sub or bi selfish, I don't know, like half selfish in a way where you have some in your benefit and need and some giving back. Like the bees, they're selfish, sure, but so are the flowers. So are everything else that's being, that's eating from the activity that the bees are applying to that environment, right? So everybody's going back and forth. It's a synergetic system. Right, it's all systems theory. It's interconnected, and we benefit from that without them knowing, just like we harm without us knowing, ignorantly, at least when we started, saying producing fossil fuels or burning them and then using them as energy. Yeah, we needed it, sure, on some level because of the system need, but overall we are not so selfish that not all of us are being ignorant or arrogant and blowing off the fact that we are destroying the planet, right? So it's a scale. Even selfishness can be a scale. So how does that work with overall any species? Well, they need to. We have to kill, like you said about death, right? We need death. We need to kill to eat, 100%. Outside of animals, kill plants, right? They're living. They have a, again, that's a scale. Life itself is a scale. How do you measure an animal, a cow, over a, go back to spinach, because that's on my mind. So if you kill a spinach plant and eat it, is that as brutal? No, but we create these things. The universe and then the earth, the globe we live in, and our ecosystem creates these things, and our environment directly impacts how the population interacts with that environment. So if you're super selfish like we are now, we've built a subculture of selfishness that people are, they feel that they are entitled to a certain degree of luxury, like Wadi was saying. But that luxury is not given in nature, right? The luxury is created by us. We're a natural outgrowth of that, but that's an injection of a systemic train of thought that's causing this mental state to flourish within our ecosystem. Outside of that, we would never have, or we already see people using the environment, taking from it, but also giving back. So that degree, depending on where you look and the perspective you have, has different impacts on the environment from the species, but also varies depending on the species and what action is taking on the environment. So these things play a role, right? It's far more complex than a yes or no issue. There's a lot that goes into how an organism survives and how right. their actions reach back to them, how they can eat and benefit from their actions without them even knowing.
I mean, there's also the question of, does the environment eventually adapt to the selfishness of a species? Like Bash, you're saying the bees will go and pollinate all these different plants and flowers in order to survive. Well, but in turn, that then allows the plants to overgrow, which will, it's so you get certain feedback loops. And just like that, I mean, in humans, we have a population that's creating a positive feedback loop versus our pollution creating a negative feedback loop, because pollution is changing the environment in a way, and then the more pollution happens, the more pollution will exist. And, so on and so forth. So it's a feedback. But with that in mind, I mean, is the environment adapting, or is that environment just then changing to control the population?
Because we are the environment, right? I think it's a back and forth interaction. We exist as a part of, interact with an environment. Thus, we're interacting with ourselves. Like, again, you can shit in wherever you're sitting right now. You're interacting with your environment. You might be giving some bug something, but then that environment is going to interact right back with you. And your environment, your physical body, outside of your brain, which is what you are, a consciousness and an organ inside of a skull, that will have a machine that's detrimented by the action of taking a poop wherever you sit every day for X amount of days. Right? It's like everything is systemic. You inject in the system, and there's an output, there's an export from that system. We all interact with it. We all are at fault for giving an action towards that system, and we all have benefits or detriments based on the output of that system.
Yeah, but then the system itself is changing.
All the time.
So if we're chasing, so I feel like humans in general want convenience, right? Like, we don't want to, we're moving to automation and all these different things because we want life to be convenient. If we keep spraying these general insecticides on all these crops and we kill all the pollinators, it's less convenient for us because we have to find different means of pollination, whereas nature's already saving us billions of dollars and doing it for us. And that's just one example. We're laying waste to all these forests that trap and sequester carbon. They naturally process carbon for us, and instead the Earth's getting hotter. So nature will adapt, but I do think you can push it past a certain point where we're going to have to do some work. And more work than we really need to. We can allocate our resources elsewhere while, you know, the bees do what they got to do, or the tulip trees, you know, eat up all the CO2 and all that stuff. So I don't know. I just, the real issue for me as an ecologist is trying to make a case for species that don't have a huge impact. You know what I mean? Like I said, not all species are created equally in a food web. They're not all equally important. And so for me, it's more of an intrinsic thing of just appreciating biodiversity and history. It's kind of like going into a museum and there are all these different artifacts. That's the same way I view species. These are things that have survived the times, and we can see them, but we're pushing most of the species or huge percentage of the species off the planet, and so not all species have instrumental value. Some just have intrinsic value to people who care about them, and so that's been like one of my biggest challenges, is trying to make a case for, you know, species that don't do anything for us. But ultimately, because it's a system, everything does something for everything. Mm-hmm. It's synergetic, and Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, with that in mind, then you end up with going back full circle, where once we do understand how to completely replicate the human genome or any biological genome, and be able to cure everything, then we can help in those species, because then we can basically replicate Jurassic Park, but for the species that are not as effective in the food web.
There'd have to be some cultural shift, though, to make people care. Because just because we have the technology doesn't mean it's going to be applied. Right now we have plenty of technology, it's just not applied to the environment, because depending on the state, you know, a lot of states don't care about it. So there has to be a shift in the zeitgeist as well, and probably a change in the power structure too, right? I mean, there has to, I don't know, there's so many layers to it. Just having the technology to change entire genomes and make them what we want isn't going to solve the problem.
Yeah,
but it would make it—it would make it maybe more possible.
Yeah, I mean, it would at least provide for the interest of profit to come into play, because opening a theme park of sorts that also preserves species and promotes education, it's also going to be very profitable. Not to mention, if you've got certain, you know, laser shooting sharks, I mean, who wouldn't want to go see that?
I wouldn't. I don't care. Seriously, I don't care. We could play like this. There's a different perspective for different people and different lifestyles that they live. Sure. Overall, shark, laser beam, you can have that. Or you can have people.
You shouldn't mess with sharks, man.
Right. Dude.
Sharks are the real artifacts of the earth, man.
True.
As far as animals go, like, leave those guys. Mess with the mammals.
Are they really? Did they really not evolve, or have not evolved since their dawn?
Everything's evolving, but in general, their body plan. I mean, besides like hammerheads and some other ones, their basic body type is, it just works.
Solid. So
good. Yeah.
Fuck that.
Unless they're swimming near Japan or one of those countries that are just slaughtering everything in the water.
That's another thing. See, again, it's a perspective that you have and what you carry in your lifestyle. So you can do with technology as you will. A technology meaning anything, paper and pen. You could stab somebody with a pen, or you can write something on a book that then you pass down, and thus the information is passed down with it. There's multiple ways we can handle multiple things. Remember a while we talked about, what is the solution for this, right? How did we get over it? It's an infinite amount. Literally, there's an infinite amount of solutions, because there's an infinite amount of problems. But the problem is, on top of all the problems, is that we don't look at these problems as issues. These problems are just an outcome of natural processes from the ignorance of a population. So we can talk about it. Us three can sit down, but okay, there's an issue with this ecosystem, there's an issue with this population, with this subpopulation. And then we can apply something. Like, we talk about vertical farms. We talked about, obviously, solar panels, geothermal energy, blah, blah, blah. This stuff is, and it's obvious, right? 100 years, dude. Not like yesterday. 100 years it's been applied, or could be applied. We're dodging it because of our lifestyle and perspective, for the majority, at least. So how do you break out of all these patterns, right? How do you break out of a systemic injection of thought to a subpopulation? Well, you have these conversations, right? You have people that are actually passionate about it, not really making jokes anymore. You can make jokes, you can have art and entertainment, but you really, you put forth your effort to be uncomfortable in each situation that you're in, to provide information to those that might not have ever cared about these instances. In my, I can go personally now, I work, right? Everybody else works. We interact with each other as people. And there's always a stigma of, you have to play a role, you have to act your role, like, be in your place. And then someone like me comes around and doesn't, right? And this is not boasting, fuck all that boasting. It's just me as a human being assertive about my ideas and opinions and bringing them out to all of the circles that I am a part of. Regardless of who you are or what you do, this idea needs to be talked about. And you might be uncomfortable for the first week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. You might actually get rejected for a couple of months, whatever, depending on how people look at you and their lifestyle and perspective. But overall, it's the effort of the single human being locally to then pass down these neurological chains that can be gripped to each other, so that the machine and overall higher system can be built sturdy to move on to interact with even higher systems. That's how these things work. But we don't have, right? We don't have that. That's a very difficult situation to be in. It's a very hard instance for you to carry on your back as you go. So those that do have a lot to carry and have a lot of responsibility to carry, to fulfill these actions, fulfill what they see, what they deem right in an accurate way, consistently. So how far can we go with our ideas? It's as far as we take them, right? How far can we go with our problems? It's as far as we recognize them. And then we move forward.
I mean, we're already definitely making large steps forward as a giant population. You look at Iceland, they have greenhouses that are powered by the volcanic activity and watered by the frozen glacial, you know, ice.
Yeah.
And it's almost 100% clean. Production
Costa Rica
of
had 100 plus days. Like, I already did it. It's not news. It's already happened. It was like 2016. It's not news. Like, this is brand.
Yeah.
This has been here for hundreds of years. But it's the fact that it's there's no place, platform for it to sit. Can't put a tripod on a mountain that has a point that's going to fall over. It's as simple as that. It's obvious. But again, we don't apply these things. So how do we inject? How do we inject? How do we apply these interconnecting pieces and give one person or one entity these pieces in a way that they can marinate with them, right? Be one with these ideas. And you can go back and forth, they can be friction, but the marination it takes time and process, and over time, if it's correct, it'll mold.
You also need to overcome the current comfort and current mechanism that's in place, because I mean, there are large corporations that are trying to squash any kind of clean energy. You look at like Tesla, for example. I'm not saying Tesla is 100% clean. I'm not, you know, not kind of advocating, but it was a new idea that came about, and there were states, because of the corporations that are in power in those states, tried, and I think for a while were successful in preventing manufacturing plants. Texas being one.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, not only do you need to present these ideas, you need a way to kind of overcome a lot of the current obstacles. And there's almost a fight that needs to be fought, not necessarily a physical, like, you know, ghetto fists and guns kind of fight, but there needs to kind of be some kind of battle that allows you to overcome and kind of have this idea be at least listened to.
So let's talk about these battles, man. Bash, you can go ahead.
I think it has to happen on a community level. That's kind of like what Yost was saying, communicating the ideas with people. But I also think when you have a country like ours where there are federal rules that can override rules put forth by, look at California, right? California, there were rumors that it wanted to secede from the country. It's a very eco-friendly state, besides, you know, the garbage pile that is LA and some of the other cities. But overall, even the people in LA, a lot of them care about the environment. And if they were left to their own devices, I think the environment would be able to flourish. But ultimately, California is a part of the United States. And the United States is this money-making juggernaut that wants to drill for oil and do, not that there, I don't know that there's oil drilling in California, but you look at Alaska. Alaska's probably our greenest state, and they just opened, Trump's allowing drilling in Alaska now at one of the most pristine, untouched environments, like truly untouched. It's hard to find places on Earth that haven't been, you know, traveled or disturbed by humans, but Alaska has some, and they're open for drilling, and it's all a part of this big machine. I think these giant nations, if you look at China as a great example, they have rule over everything, and you look at, they have a shit ton of endangered species over there. I think if the environment's going to be tended to, it's going to have to happen on a smaller community level, and some portions of the planet are not going to be saved, and other portions will. For instance, I think a place like California might stay greener, or Oregon is probably going to stay greener, whereas New York State probably not so much.
Congested cities. I agree. It's impossible to pass what we want in terms of nature, right? In a state that's already blocked it off. There's no nature in New York City. There's no whiff of anything outside of what has been constructed through a societal train of thought. It's not something that has been conjured up through the finite planet itself, right? It doesn't. Those resources, like taking a bunch of trash from all over the place, from all over your house, say apartment, and put it in one corner. Well, that's what New York is. It's like taking all the trash from around Pennsylvania and then around New York itself and then around Maryland, all the stuff in the Northeast, and then putting it in one congested place. We focus on that, trying to take out that trash. It's futile because it reproduces. What we focus in on is the opportunities we might have in California or anywhere else that's more modern in thought, more willing to follow a momentum that we have built right in the beginning. But going like starting all over, right, or starting fresh, is how can we go back and figure out what human beings are, right? What are we, and why have we come to this position? We want to talk about evolution, right?
I think a meteor, like a really big meteor, has to slam into like a huge, not that I want this, but like a huge population of people, and then we get back to our fundamental, like, fuck. It's kind of like what happens with like when there's a huge shooting, like the Las Vegas thing. We're kind of reminded, like, fuck, man, there's a lot of danger out there, and each other is all we got, that kind of thing. Like, it seems like a catastrophe of some sort.
But the catastrophe is becoming the new norm, no matter what it is. Yeah. It's amazing. I remember Columbine being the most ridiculous situation that's ever happened. It would be looked at as like a different universe. It's someone that came from a dark, evil place and then committed these acts. Now it's just, oh, a school shooting the other day. Again, why do you remember we talked about that? Like, it becomes, oh, did you go outside today? Yeah, did you get shot? No, okay, well, yeah, that's good. Like, yeah. There's an issue with that.
It's almost like, I don't even know how to explain it. Like, people start out in certain environments that can be a little dangerous, and then they decide, I'm going to move on to a better place. Yos and I were talking about this the other day, where we both lived in a very poor neighborhood, and then luckily over time we had the privilege of moving away from that environment. That ended up really allowing us with better environments and more privilege. But now it's getting to the point where a lot of the problems you see in a poor neighborhood, where people are just fighting to survive, happening everywhere else. People are afraid to go to school, whether that school's had a shooting or not, because now that's a populated area. After that guy in the Batman movie shot up the movie theaters, a lot of people were afraid to go to the movie theaters. People stopped wanting to send their kids to movie theaters. I mean, it's an environment that's just, it's ridiculous.
Give it an allegory based on a bacterial or equivalent to a bacterial level. Let's look at it through the eagle's eye, right? How these human beings are interacting, where one becomes super, like a virus, and then all the other ones just gravitate away from it and then put blame on that singular virus instead of knowing the entire system that it's a part of, right? That virus itself is indeed a sub-entity of the entire entity, right? We go back to the system thinking. If that's true, then everyone interacting with that virus a certain way and saying, oh, they're fearing, oh, we fear this action, they're causing this action to be reoccurring because they're not addressing it in a logical manner. They're reacting to it. And so what happens in nature when you just react, right? A new outcome comes about. It doesn't have to be good. It's just an outcome to survive the situation. So when this virus comes about, right, it acts a certain way. It's detriment to the cell. That cell can't just run away from that. It has to fix. But what we're doing now is...
Oh, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. How do you fix... So I feel like we're bouncing all over the place, but sure. I only brought up like catastrophe because you were saying... Like, how do we, like, get back to our roots? I feel like in catastrophe, that's when that happens. And, like, what you were saying about a virus just now, it made me think of, like, basically how humans are to the planet, if the planet was a cell, you know what I mean? And the only way, I guess not the only way, I don't know, I really think that some... I don't know. I don't see a shift in the culture where all of a sudden we care about the environment. I just don't see it. I don't know if that's a nihilist kind of approach. I almost feel like things have to be reset.
Yeah, I mean, not that I'm hoping for any kind of large scale catastrophe.
No, I definitely don't.
But nihilist.
I mean, I agree with you, Bash, that there needs to be some kind of, if we're going to reset from zero and rebuild everything, it needs to be a catastrophic event similar to that of the volcanoes or earthquakes or meteor of the dinosaurs, whatever that caused it got settled. It needs to be almost like 70% of the population would have to disappear. And
but
that's
why?
Just...
No. Why but, is it in numbers? I don't think numbers
matter. In order for it to be an instant reset, that would have to happen. Now, the other way that it could happen is with re-education. If you get enough of a population to be educated from a young age where conservation is important, it's not so much about economy and survival as much as it is allowing the environment to kind of
the message should be long-term sustainability.
Yes, it's not
because
about
you can't keep chopping down forests. There are only so many forests. You're going to run out of wood at some point.
Finite.
You know,
finite.
Yeah, it's finite resources. So why not
be more efficient?
Exactly. And yeah, so that goes back to education. I kind of said it in jest, like a comet needs to hit the planet. I don't think that has to be the actual reset. Maybe
if it does.
But yeah, I think
that would be a quick, easy solution. I mean, not easy, but that would be a quick solution.
But if
we do start
time to reflourish the entire population again, right? It could end up being worse. That's the thing. Restarting doesn't mean better. Nature is a process. It can go either way. Good in our perspective, sure, but that doesn't solve anything. If we're dying through a meteorite, we're dying right now. It just makes things quicker, right? That's all.
Well, there would be a less of a divide because right now, like we were saying earlier, there's all these other countries that each have their own ideologies. In the U.S. alone, there's 50 plus states that have each similar or independent ideologies. And then you come into cities, and it's almost like every unit or every building has its own ideology. There's such a vast difference that you can't get everybody on the same page.
It's a melting pot.
Exactly. It's a melting pot and a melting pot and a melting pot and a melting pot and so on and so forth. You go into a rural area, that environment tends to stick closer together because it's a few units that need to work together to survive. You go to an urban environment, I don't care what the person across the street's going to do. I've got what I need. I'm going to work for what I need. Maybe my next door neighbor, maybe a couple people might agree, but not the whole neighborhood. You know what I mean? You look in the city, you'll find a building or a couple units will make a community garden or will make a bee-friendly flower pot or a bird-friendly to kind of get some of the environments happening. But you see that on a building-to-building or a unit to unit basis. You don't see that as a city on a whole. You know what I mean? You don't go to Madison Square Garden and you'll see this event that's promoting the environment. You'll see a concert that is creating and generating a lot of waste. Hmm. You know, the overall community is not going to all agree on the same thing. I want a garden. I want a bee box. But it's going to be on smaller places. Now, if you start educating the population from a young age, similar to how churches have done it for millions of years now, well, thousands of years, not quite millions, similar to how certain governments have indoctrinated their children. But if you allow for that, and I'm not saying it's always right, but it's not always wrong when you indoctrinate a child at a young age.
Okay, how about forget right or wrong? It's what works and what doesn't.
Yeah.
No, okay. In nature, this has been on my back end for a long time, and there's been papers written about this. There's no such thing as freedom, right? This idea of I'm gonna choose because I am a separate entity from my system in the world that I live in, and I am able to go buy myself some whipped cream that is chocolate, whatever. It doesn't exist. There's no such thing as freedom. You are a system, going back to that, encapsulated by laws. What are these laws? You can't drink bleach. You can't fly. There's gravity around you, right? You can't do these things. So you have to abide by these laws that restrict you to certain actions, to certain jumps that you might otherwise would make in life. So that being said, you can't go out and have a music fest that throws away food in abundance when a part of the world, right, has no food at all. That's an obvious statement, isn't it? But because we are psychologically instilled to a certain pattern, right? Going back to all the same stuff that we were saying before, because we're combining these factors together, free will, self-flourishment, individualism, Adam Smith, all these people that create this ideology of I need to go out and do it myself, they start separating each of us, each single cell in this population, away from the fact that we are all a one coexisting organism encapsulating or having a habitat that has finite resources and that we need to use these resources in a more efficient way. Or the bottom line, like anything else that we've seen in medicine, that we've seen in biology, like we've definitely seen in history, will kill us, will destroy us.
And this happens. Not only are we a system together now, but we're a lineage, right? So so like look thousands, we have an issue with only seeing within our own lifespan, but you really have to and it's almost like a human condition not being able to understand that things are finite, like extinction, things like that. Like we only live within our lifespan, and there has to be a shift where we realize we are a lineage, and that, you know, 1,000 years from now, 2,000 years from now, there are going to be people on the planet, and our decisions now are ultimately going to affect them. And so yeah, we're a system over thousands of years, let alone right now.
Yeah, I agree. We have a hard time. I mean, even looking at my grandparents' generation, their effect on not just the ecology, but the smaller economy of their environment, they refuse to recognize a lot of that as it is. And that's within their lifetime. So yes, we do focus only during our lifetime, but there's a lot of the negative aspects that a lot of us just choose to refuse to even accept the negative aspects of it.
It's the lack of information. No disrespect to your parents or your grandparents, but what kind of education did they get? What kind of school did your grandma and grandfather go to, or any place of information distribution that gives them the right information about science, about understanding themselves outside of the cultural understanding? We know what women do in the kitchen. We know what men do in the field. That stuff is ancient. But that's the stuff that is still prominent today. That's the stuff that we're trying to run away from. So anyone from the old generation, new generation, it doesn't matter. You can feed them the same thing. They're going to have the same outcome. The point is to change that. It's to take, and right, what we're saying locally, but to do it locally, it's the only way that it could possibly happen. We have no control outside of our direct interactions. Nothing at all. So we must change how we interact directly, obviously, to then have that chain reaction be distributed like a domino effect outside of our bubble. This thinking is the only way to go. Again, you look at your body. How does it work? In the same type of system. You look at your direct environment, your ecology. How does it work? The same type of system. It's systems within systems within systems. And if that understanding can't be injected into our day-to-day thinking, like if you go past a homeless person and recognize or don't recognize that this guy is a failure of a system, it produced a dead cell. The cell cannot thrive in whatever it was given to it. Instead, don't point at him. Understand he's a part of the group that you're in, and try or have some emotional reaction to change that. You don't have to go and give money. Just understand this guy's a human being. He was born like I was born. He had the same patterns that I had in terms of development. He has hands. He has a head. But he just, the environment didn't give him, right? He's a dead cell. So we can't look at him as an other. We have to look at him as us. And that way of thinking applies to everything in all sciences. So we go an interdisciplinary, right? We talked about the one thing that is productive in our system is if you take your discipline, like Bash, you have a PhD, going for a PhD now. So you're getting this paper about this experience, about this expertise in one subject. But how much of that is just going to carry that one discipline? To flourish, you're going to have to combine to make something new, to add to your studies, to grow your ideas. If you just focused on this PhD by itself, it'd do nothing, right? This information would do nothing outside of its application within other disciplines to then create something new, something tangible that you can then append to the momentum of science to take it further for the next generations, right? That's why we're one organism and you're playing that one piece.
So to simplify what you just said, because you just gave a wonderful explanation of what we need. Basically, we'll need education in order to guide a social evolution, in order to provide for the environment for generations to come.
Yes. At least
It
at a minimum.
has to infiltrate some places it's unlikely to infiltrate too. So, like if you're in the Trump household, right? Or in fucking, I don't know, the real rich,
Circus.
out of touch, yeah, real out of touch places, I think the education has to infiltrate there, because ultimately those are the people who have the power, who can make influence. If we educate among ourselves, it's great, but how much change can the common man actually bring about?
The common man had nothing, man. We had, again, going back to hunter-gatherers, I don't know if you want to say something, Wadi, but hunter-gatherers, we could start there too, just to finish up our encapsulation of what evolution actually is. Like, we are more than anything adaptable. We are more than anything able to change our ways based on our pressures. Like, it's obvious. Look, even currently today, we have people living in a jungle still. We don't need materials. People are living without them and living long years. We don't need plastic because we're living with plants and hunting ants still today. And then you have a comparison to New York or any place like that. We see that we're just adaptable more than anything else. So when we say human nature, what human nature do? What are you, where are you pointing? At what period of time? At what place on a planet? At what part of the species evolution and development? What are you pointing to? I'm pointing to Adam Smith because in Europe he said this shit 200 years ago, and that's all we follow now. Indoctrination. There we are.
I mean, I agree with Bash. If we want an immediate change, we need to be able to educate the people in power outside of their personal comfort and gain. But how much that is going to come back to, are they willing to learn something new?
So when you're teaching them, when you're teaching these kids, right? Are
Not the
they?
kids. We're talking about the current people in power, because going back to
They're
what I was
not.
saying
Yeah.
earlier,
Yeah, I'm
I guess.
saying I don't think there's any saving, any of those guys. I'm saying like their grandchildren, their great grandchildren. I think those are the people who have to be educated, more so than, I mean, we should all be educated, but I think the people who ultimately are going to have power in the future, those are the people whose mind state really need to be switched. Because the population as a whole is moving towards a state of enlightenment, right? But it doesn't matter that we're enlightened. It matters who's pulling the triggers, who's in control. You know what I mean? Like we're the smartest generation that's, ever existed, but that doesn't matter. We're still drilling for oil and doing all this shit. It doesn't matter. If you enlightenment alone isn't gonna bring about change. It has to be directed in the right place.
There has to be application, man. It has to be not your Instagrams, not your fucking Facebooks, which is great, right? They're a platform themselves. But they have to be beyond that. It's one, even if you reach people through these platforms, there's so many studies that show it only involves the short term. All this stuff just exists in a void, in a vacuum. Again, why do we talk about this? But it was a missed podcast, so I'll re-mention it now. These fucking things consume your attention and cut it down to pieces of that dissecting. That's it. You don't know how to encapsulate an idea and put it together and have it form in your thoughts and then develop it in a way that can connect other ideas. You can't do that when you're just short-term memory, your short-term memory is being overfused
Utilized.
with and utilized with information that is not concurrent with anything tangible in reality. You're not doing anything. You sit down for an hour in front of a phone, on Instagram, you can read, sure, but on Instagram, say that, or any other platform that you'd like that has no information on it, you scan, you put the phone down, you sit, meditate. What just happened? What occurred in the 60-minute period? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. The only thing you can do, we said this before too, is if you're a psychologist, you can grab away these little pieces of people's lives and put it together and try to make a conclusion with this invalid information to say that this guy is this guy is that. But outside of that, outside of that spectrum, what can you do? What has this done to your short-term memory, your frontal lobe, right? Well, what has it done to your organ as a brain? We have to take these into consideration when we're saying new generations. We have to take this into consideration when we're talking about kids, because these are also the platforms that are being given to them.
So one thing that Bash saying about educating the quote-unquote people in power that got me thinking of a possible shorter-term resolution would be making somebody who studies politics as a career, that not only do they learn about the immediate quote-unquote politics, the government system, the laws, but they force into that curriculum education about healthcare, education about environment, education about all the other aspects. Because if you are going to be running, or if your life goal is to be somebody who runs and works in politics, you need to have an education that encompasses more so than what somebody who focuses on medicine, more so than somebody who focuses on art, more so than somebody who focuses on any other singularity discipline.
It's never going to happen. Because politics is a business of lying. That's it. It was made off that. Politics is theater. Greek word. Look, it's literally theater.
As it is
now. From the gets of its days, it was formed so people can reach other people or sway people in any way possible.
But that's the definition of it as it is now. If we can make the change where people who study politics are learning that art, because it is an art, it is a theater, like you said, but they can utilize it in a sense where they already have the background knowledge about all these other aspects, then even that line can be used in a way that can benefit the environment. Because then they can, the same way they can maneuver around certain regulations to provide for their own personal gain, if they're well educated, they can maneuver around to provide access to certain beneficial activities.
That has to be all of us. That has to be the majority,
sure.
At least.
Everybody needs to be educated.
Forget a politician.
Right now, politicians, I mean, people vote for who they like, not for the most educated.
Mm.
If we start electing officials that are the most educated, and I don't mean in a singular discipline, but I mean most well-rounded education, then that I think that would only benefit.
Dude, what do you think is going to happen when we become even more desensitized to violence, right? In Mexico, they shot and killed over 100 people, future politicians. That's just in Mexico, right there. That's down there in the border. People, you want to change the rules? Bop, dead. And we're like, oh, okay. Before, if one politician died, no, it's not. It's normal. It's normal. And so eventually, say you have these, say 5 people, 10 people represent a state, or 100 people, it does nothing. It does nothing. And that's, again, being cynical in a way, because it might change, skew something to this angle or that angle, but it's, at the end of the day, it's a broken shape. It's not going to form anything constructive for the long term. Right? You can't sustain people having a few bunch rule them all. That's what we're doing now. We have a 1% rule them all, right? We can't change shit unless all of us be like, oh, they're just people and we're abiding by a thought. That's the only way they're controlling. It's not physical control anymore. It's a sophisticated fate, money, centralized banking control. Obvious, right? The only way, if I go to that person, whoever's in control, look him in the eye directly, he's like me. Flesh, flesh, blood, blood. Punch dead, right? You punch, you get knocked out. I can kill you. You can kill. They're just people. It's just the chains now are far more sophisticated. They're far more. They're harder to implement. But the time that they've had to implement them, they've been injected smoothly into all of our mental state. So how do you expect anybody trying to fight a Goliath like them, if the whole population can't? How can a politician? How can, and what do the politicians do? They talk. What is speech? It's a form of language or a form of communication based on symbols. How can symbols change a state of mind? Right? We've got to this point, but how can a symbol in such a finite space, in a finite frame of thinking, change something to something else. Do you see what I'm saying? It doesn't. It can't do that. You have to make something else, crush it, and make the old system obsolete based on a new system that we create. That's the only way possible. So as going back to what you were saying to stay in line, if a politician does have all these credentials, is multi-dexterous in a polymath and all that stuff, if he's able to bring the sciences to the people, it still won't be enough, dude. It still is detrimental because these kids, depending on their environment, because it's not fixed, will skew off and produce something else. That's how humans are always going to work. What we say a solution would be is if each environment, if we could cut off locally a piece of a state, make it, go ahead, you do your own thing, we'll apply all technologies and resources you have, and then do that across a nation. Make the United States states, right? Make Texas, Dallas, Austin, make Pennsylvania, and let them survive on their, not on their own. We interact with each other, obviously, but we use technology to export, import needs, not just wants, of that certain place in the world. And thus we have more efficiency, right? We have people working not for somebody else, but for themselves to sustain their local area. It's like, again, to add on to this, having a hierarchy inside the job place. How much more do you think would people or employees want to contribute to their job if they have a piece of it, that they own a piece of it, right? It's not just I'm working for the man so he can crush my head. I have a piece. Whatever I put in, I get out. So how much more would people put in? How much more people do overtime, quote unquote? It wouldn't even be overtime. It'd be my life because I dedicate myself to this thing that I'm helping others develop along with myself. So it's a different state of mind that we're just so far away from. And unfortunately, it's going to be much worse, much, much worse before it gets anything close to a positive change.
Well, this brings us back full circle to us saying about how there are so many different layers to it that you can't fix it with one simple solution. But one of the biggest things that definitely needed to happen was education across all board. Now, you're starting to go off onto a little more of a tangent where, yes, there are other things that could be done. But as far as what's best for the environment, what's best for allowing us to produce a healthier environment for future humans, one of the first things, in my opinion, that would be beneficial would be educating the young and changing the politics major. In a university or the people who kind of go into politics, because you don't need a degree to be in politics. But if your education encompasses all that, in order to even apply to be a senator or apply to be a mayor, like you need to pass a certain level of knowledge. So you're not just focused on this one thing, the act of how do I get stuff done and how can I tell people one thing in order to get my agenda passed. So that's, you know, focusing on the one thing. I mean, I definitely agree with you. There is a million other things that can happen. But when focusing on this one scope, I think that would be the first thing that could happen.
Yeah.
What about you, Bash?
I don't think it's enough to inform the public. I think that's a part of it. But how do you, the gap between the population, the power, at least, the gap between the population and the government. What's to say we become really enlightened, right? And then we protest and we all come to this conclusion, fuck the government. What's to say that we're not Palestinians standing in front of Israeli snipers at that point? Mm-hmm. Like what can we actually do, right? Yusuf, you live in Texas, so it's a little different. You have like your own militia down there. But like for us up here, like, and everyone really, what can you actually do to stop that system? You know what I mean? Like, the same people who are making environmental laws are lobbying in with people making assault rifles that are, you know what I mean? Like that our armies are equipped with. Like, I don't know. Again, I think this podcast is making me realize I'm a nihilist because I don't. I think it's a comment, man. That's.
But it's nothing new, man.
A comment.
Depression comes with information because it's to know what's going on is to change what's going on. That's literally it.
Not necessarily, though, man. You could know and then have nothing change. That's kind of what's been going on.
I don't think anybody knows. I think, okay, so we know there's people dying because of guns, right? Any causal understanding of why it's happening? I don't think we know. Only the few that push forward. But I'm talking like real information. Like, I could read about 1,000 things. The world's a better place. It's just human nature. You're outdated, man. But I get it. I get the ignorance. But then the outcome is expected across the board.
I guess my question is, okay, so once we're educated, then what?
It's not enough. You're right.
Then what happens? Like, what's the action that takes place? Do we all march up to Washington and say, hey, man,
no.
Stop investing all this money into the military.
One of the things that will happen is by the time the upcoming generations are educated enough in order to kind of do that, where they can march onto Washington, our generation would be the one in Washington, or maybe our children would be the ones in Washington, and they will seem outdated, which is a benefit because we already have this education started.
I mean, is it going to be our children, or is it going to be Ted Cruz's grandchildren and Hillary Clinton's grandchildren? Like, who's actually going to go into office?
What I'm saying is, by our children, I'm saying our generation.
No, so I know. I'm saying
Ted Cruz and Hillary Clinton, they're the generation above ours.
I'm saying their grandchildren.
Well, yeah. So let's say their grandchildren. If education is already happening, the influence of our generation onto the younger generation is already present.
Right.
They say millennials are destroying this industry and that industry. But then you look at the people who actually study evolution of the economy, that happens. It's not that we're destroying it, we're reshaping it. All right, so we've already have an effect of reshaping the economy. There's right. already this big push from our generation. We're just not in power because Ted Cruz, Hillary Clinton, Trump, all the people that are in power in the U.S. All right, there's already this big divide between, and yes, it's not like 100%, or 90% us, 10% them, but they're the ones in power. It is closer to a 50-50 divide. But then you look at the younger generation with more technology, not agreeing with their parents, us not agreeing with our parents.
That's been happening for a long time, but that goes back to the evolution theory in general, is that nothing happens short term. If you are looking at anything on a positive side, you know it's going to take a large scale outside of, in time too, timing scale.
Yeah.
A large piece of that needs to be applied.
And you look at Japan. Japan has restructured their laws and regulations to provide a sustainable human growth, because people refuse to have children in Japan. And they are now restructuring their laws. Same thing happened with China. They were having too many children. They instituted a law where you can have a set number of those to get fined, and the poor could not afford the fine.
Hmm.
But now they've restricted growth for their benefit enough that now they're reinstating you can have multiple children. You look at Finland, you look at Sweden, you look at Iceland. There's already this big shift between generations that is providing for a healthier ecology. It's not instantaneous, like we've all said throughout this podcast. So I think even Ted Cruz's children, for an example, or Hillary Clinton's, if she even has great-grandchildren or whatnot soon, they will be closer to our mentality than their parents and grandparents will be. Not 100%, but that's where education comes in.
They'll be closer, but they won't be anywhere near productive.
Well, we don't know. We don't know the effect of education on it yet because it hasn't happened. If we make a stronger push for education, that's where the key element happens.
So education in what? Schools? And education in reading?
All around. Everywhere.
Phones? Again, that education is one thing. We say that generally, but...
It definitely has to be applied in the household.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. There has to be, like you were talking about, social media and how we're very externally stimulated and driven. Our appearance and all that stuff is important. I think there has to be like a value on education, and so our internal self becomes the focus of the focus, our focus and our priority, rather than how, you know, we look through Instagram filters and shit like that. It has to be made a priority to be, you know, intelligent, knowledgeable, to be able to speak.
So should it be mandated?
I don't know, man. I don't know if
it's hard.
You can't give a simple answer.
I don't think it should be mandated. Hmm. I don't think so. I think like Wadi said, the education will eventually override ignorance. It's just going to take a long time, and in that time, how much damage will we have done?
Will we go away and move away from monogamy, though?
This podcast was more or less the evolution of the human population, which I think is good.
Yeah. This podcast was everything. I can't recall everything we talked about because my brain was
bored, there's
all on the same note there.
A little bit about animal evolution. Oh,
give the fuck, man. As long as we're talking serious, until number 10, nothing's going to be stable. Even number 10, I told you, but it's lost because of that fucking podcast. This is just us practicing to be honest in front of these technologies.
Yes.
That's it. Like, even my thoughts, like, they don't come about. And I see you guys, it's hard. It's really hard not to see somebody and feel them and connect with them physically. It's hard to talk over this, especially for a long period of time. And we're practicing. We might never get there. Might need to do things separately. I don't know. But it's us trial and error until we see a comfortable place for all of us to sit there and enjoy this conversation. It's hard because half of my interactions are physical. I mean, productive ones at least. Everything else is just, oh, I'm just wasting time or doing this and that. It's different with human beings. You need them to be in your presence.
Yeah, not to mention the physical podcast gets lost between all of Yos's video game posts, so.
Yeah, that's true. That's the good stuff. Nobody cares about the podcast. Like, yo, what game are you playing today?
Exactly.
But look, man, human beings, a takeaway from this for me is, and as always, it's going to be that we are adaptive and we can make ourselves whatever we want. We are not free. We're abided by these laws and rules that we are born into because of a nearly infinite timeline of existence in the universe. We are just another outcome of that. Call it cells, call it an organism, whatever you want to call it. We're just another phase in an infinite amount of time that's going to try to figure shit out. And I think we all have great lives in comparison, at least. And we can't really overwhelm ourselves with these negative thoughts. But it is something that's important because if we forget about them, if us, the new generation, the ones that are in control now, we forget about them. So what changes do the next generations have, right? I wish my dad would have taught me a little bit more because he knew a little bit more. But he didn't. It was me that had to do the work. Fine, no struggle there. But I'm going to do my part to give the next generation whatever I can, or the people around me whatever I can. Again, even if it's uncomfortable and makes my situation a little bit harder.
Yeah, we also have the tools to kind of reach more than just our immediate offspring. I mean, our parents would not have been able to, just because media sharing was restricted to TV and radio.
Yeah, but even then, I think the most impactful is, like, Jordan Peterson was impactful through media because of a certain ideology that's existing in his zeitgeist today. But outside of that, like, he wouldn't be as effective. He'd be a lecturer, a professor of some sort, like, someone that's here today, gone tomorrow, like everyone else, like before him. These ideologies have to stick. And how do they stick? It's by having proof. How do you have proof? Live it.
You need the experience.
You have to be the example that you're talking about. Like, oh, I eat healthier. But you're fucking you. Like, honestly, doctors that are obese, you're not a doctor. No, but regardless, you should hurt. No, it should hurt. Seriously, you should hurt for anyone in that state, because it's a contradiction of what we are. And every time you see a contradiction, you ignore it. It grows like the cancer. You don't ignore the cancer. You have to take away that fucking tumor. So it's in our train of thought. It's in our lifestyle. It's what we see. It's in our community. You don't attack it. You don't get rid of it. You become it. And thus goes the virus.
Yeah. Do as I do, not as I say, kind of thing.
You know, do both. Do both. And see the result, because I should be the example.
No, that's what I'm saying. You should lead by doing what I do, not just what I say.
Yeah, not just, but listen to what I'm saying. I hope you're listening a little bit. There's a reason I'm talking. Well, I'm
just joking. What you're saying is what you're living. You're not. It's not true. Like the old way before, where, you know, like, oh, I got this growing up all the time. Don't smoke cigarettes, as my dad is smoking a cigarette. I'm telling you what to do because I'm doing the wrong thing. Yep. I know I'm doing the wrong thing, but I'm going to tell you what to do because I'm telling you the right thing, even though I don't believe it, because I'm doing the wrong thing. What did I do? I smoked cigarettes. I mean, I let them go because of a personal choice I made, but just being told wasn't enough. Now, seeing my parents do certain stuff, seeing how hard they worked, made me a hard worker. Seeing my parents neglect their bodies made me neglect my body because that's the environment that I grew up in. So it's just like you're saying, you need to not just say what the right thing is, you need to live the right thing.
So what you're saying is New York has to be underwater due to climate change for us to do something about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're gonna need, yeah, like you said, you're gonna need some event
to see it, man. Climate
change. And look, man, we were cynical here, but this is another part of it, that cynicism has to exist, right?
That's a part of education, man.
Yes, the stress, the ugh feeling, the I'm tired of this. Yeah, you got to feel that to understand why it's making you tired, to understand how much work you're putting in. How else can you measure? There's no other way to measure. You have to feel, because that's all we are. We only have a set amount of fucking stimulations that we can get in our brain and in our body. Let's access all of them. Let's not ignore the ones that make you feel a little bit worse. No, let's sit there with them. Meditate on it, man. Meditate. Update your software. Why are you running on Vista, bruh? We have 10 out. Like, seriously. Let's do this shit. We are learning more. We apply more. It's happening in our technologies, and you just ignore it as a person? No, thank you. No, thank you. And not only no thank you to you, no thank you to the whole community if you do this, because you're a part of it. We are all a piece. If you have a coworker, whoever he is, he's an asshole. The whole team is going to be detrimented by that asshole, because everyone's going to swoop, swap, you know, dodge him as best as they could. There's an issue. We are all one, right? Oh, you're so corny. This is not... No, but we're all one, dude. Like, we're the same shit. As long as we connect, we will survive well. As long as we give ourselves, each other, the respect, we will survive well. If you are being bad, why do you know I'm being hard at you with this whole weight thing? Because I fucking love you, dude. No, seriously. Because I see
shit. No, and I take it. I see it.
And I have to... I won't feel right myself not telling you about it. And whoever it is, it could be you, it could be Bash, it could be... Bash, you know, I can't talk to you as much, but like the PhD thing, I know it's good for you. I know it's amazing for you. But I have, in my brain, I can see some stagnation for it. But when we talk about that, if we ever see each other again or one-on-one, we'll talk about that and discuss it. But that's who I am as a person. You want to talk about the PhD?
Not now. I'm saying we could talk about it, though.
Seriously, man, seriously. Because it comes with being a human being.
I got two quotes for you. Mm. All right. One is, we're all in this together, from High School Musical. Thanks to your little speech. And the other one is, to quote you, innovation only comes from a pressure. So we definitely have a lot of pressures on our economy and on our society, you know, for multiple different reasons. Mm. So hopefully innovation comes out of that in the form of a positive change for ecology.
After some violence, after some bloodshed, after the population really gets smacked, because that's what's happening, right? We're like, you're not, it's like, you know, disobedience and kids and stuff, and it's the old way of doing it, but that's what nature does. Again, nature is not, it's not a cool parent. It doesn't care. You're an organism, you're fucking up. Smack! And we're just, shit, this is off. Oh my, so we're finally realizing that, and like, how do we handle this? How do we get better? I don't want nature to do this to me anymore. And either we get better, or nature's gonna be like, you're gone, dude. Good job. Right. Next, now who's next up? Who's next up in line?
And I just wanna make a quick disclaimer, because you know, three Arabs are talking together on a podcast recording. You know, somebody's listening. We are not advocating for any actual event to take place. We are not wishing for any actual event that will harm the population to take place.
That's a good point. I said comet.
Whatever it is, we're not wishing for any of that.
I can't make a comet happen.
There is a benefit of it.
Do it.
Do it.
Do it.
Yeah. All right, Mikey.
All right. Guys, you want to end it here? I think we had a good sesh. I got a lot off my chest. How do you guys feel?
Pretty good.
Good, man.
It's going to be like this sometimes, right? We're going to... I don't even know anything. We just went. I think we had a state of mind. We went to it. Fuck it. That's what I felt like. And then, you know, but we did it. It's another one down. And I think the more forward we go and the more we put effort into this, we're going to get a good result out of it. eventually we're all going to be hopefully together, because I don't know why you guys are in PA and you want to bash, you want to come down here. I know you want to. Dude, I'm seeing turtles on the creek every day, like every hour. I know you want to come down here.
You don't know what they are though, man.
I have no idea what it is, but it's cool as fuck, because honestly, it's what we grew up like looking at, and it's something you're passionate about. Me seeing it like makes me think of you, and like, right. Come out, come down here, right? Come down here, not just live in Texas, but just flourish in the potentials that we have. Because fucking PA, man, there's, in my experience, what I have, it's been a jail cell in comparison. Seriously.
Yeah.
I'll be here at least five more years.
Yo, oh, wait, okay. All
right. Cool.
All right. Peace and love, guys.
See you guys. All right, man.